The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I am your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. We have such a great guest tonight. I actually consider her one of the utmost experts when it comes to Rex Heuermann. She's from there. We're going to get into it, but I really love having her on the show whenever we talk about Rex. And of course, it's time to talk about him because he has pled. So we're going to talk about that a bit. And then we're going to also get her reflections on Nancy Guthrie. I appreciate you guys. We were getting a few things set up, getting some extra pictures pulled in, and then also getting her squared away so you can see her beautiful face. Before I go into getting her onto camera, though, I want to properly introduce her. So I've been doing better with doing this with guests and having actual write-ups so I can properly let you know who we have on stage. Lisa Rubikoff, first, she's a licensed private investigator. She's an advanced trained polygraph examiner. She's also the associate producer and Investigators Discoveries Unraveled, the Long Island Serial Killer podcast. Remember, I told you she's an expert. She currently serves on the board of directors for the American Polygraph Association as the seminar program chair. She is listed as a court certified expert for private investigations and polygraph. Have I left anything out? She is also, a certified expert private investigations for the city of New York, both Nassau and Suffolk counties in Long Island. All right, there she is, and we're gonna bring her up on stage. Thank you all for being here. Lisa, how are you?
Hey, Jen, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to have you on the show. I always love it when you come on because you bring so much energy, you bring excitement, and mostly, you bring your true, unvetted comments. So let's start out with Rex Heuermann. Tell us about how you got into that case. Tell us why it means so much to you.
Okay, well, thank you for having me back. And I'm very glad that you're appreciative of as unhinged as we're going to be. So it's a very interesting situation. I was actually, I grew up on Long Island, originally in Oceanside, which is the South Shore of Nassau County, and approximately 20 minutes away from Gilgo Beach. And I would say without traffic, maybe 25 minutes from where Rex's house was. And it was interesting because at the time that this was taking place, I was actually in high school. So it was always a conversation I had with my parents of be careful where you're going at night, like avoid the areas of where this is going on, no late drives at the beach, don't do anything crazy. But it was also coming from the perspective of my parents grew up during the time of David Berkowitz, who is Son of Sam. And he was another prolific serial killer in New York. And he predominantly focused his area around the Queens, New York City, and Brooklyn area. And my father is also a private investigator. And that's kind of how I got started in the field of what we were doing. We were a small family-owned and operated business. So it was very interesting having dinner time conversations where my father and I and my mother would sit awkwardly between us and get it kind of both ears, like serial killer, murder, and this and that. And discussing his experience growing up in high school with David Berkowitz and then me growing up and having a different alleged at the time serial killer, what the actions were. So we were kind of always comparing case notes and discussing everything openly. And you know, that's kind of where I got my love for, I guess, not necessarily investigations, but just more so serial killer cases.
And it's so interesting you say that because I don't know if you knew this, but I grew up just miles from Dennis Rader, BTK. And was the one, massacring people in and around Park City is where he was from. I grew up in Valley Center. Okay. And so, of course, Carrie, his daughter, and I had a lot in common, a lot that brought us to have a lot of interesting conversations very early on in the BK case, the Idaho 4 case. But anyway, it's kind of interesting. Just something else you and I have in common is
it's a weird version of 3 degrees of separation. And when we discuss serial killers in general, I hate to put it this way, but you brought up Dennis, and I served on the National Cold Case Task Force that was actually created by the sheriff's office at Osage County to look into additional cold cases that could have been tied to Dennis. I don't even like calling him BTK because that's kind of giving him homage to what he did. He's got a name. I like calling him Dennis, and that's it. Like Rex, he'll always just be Rex, and that's that. But I see so many parallels between how yesterday went, between what we know of Dennis's trial and what we know of what took place yesterday. And it's just eerily freaky. And I'm sure that you can probably relate to that.
Yeah, definitely so, except for Dennis, and I'm the same. I call him Dennis Rader. He named himself BTK, for those who don't know it. He literally would sign that, and that's how he came to BTK. It wasn't because of the Wichita Eagle and Beacon or Cake TV or all of these other outlets he contacted. He named himself. So, Dennis, you're Dennis to us. The big difference to me was, well, it had parallels, right? Because out of the blue, they came forward. But of course, Dennis was like verbal diarrhea when it came time to talk about his cases there in open court. And, you know, Rex really was more yes, 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 strangulation, a few one word responses. But still, I thought at least he had to somewhat more than BT or BK did, Brian Koberger did, was at least allocute. And the biggest thing is, I want to hear it from you, though, too, if you thought this was that he has to discuss all his cases. It's going to take over a year with the behavioral analysis unit of the FBI.
Jen, can I curse?
Please do. Go ahead.
I needed permission first before I did or say anything, because you've seen my responses on Twitter and I've been holding it in, and it's like you boil the pot of noodles and you got the foam at the top and it's just ready to overflow. So you need the wooden spoon. I am so fucking angry that he is going to be, quote unquote, I understand the point of research. They want to kind of get into his head. But the fact of the matter is that through the search warrants, when they searched his house, they searched the storage units and everything, his webpage and his social histories, he's looking up John Douglas. He idolized the man. He idolized the work of the BAU. And now you're going to go ahead and give him the opportunity for them to interview him. It's bad enough he had a smirk on his face in court yesterday. And the New York Post actually posted a picture of him smiling. And all I wrote back was like, I'd love to smack that shit off his face. Because it's like he was enjoying the fact that he got to say openly, yeah, I did it. He's allowing himself some sort of claim to fame and owning up to his stuff. But it's all psychological. And I get why the BAU wants to do it. But you're rewarding negative behavior. And as someone that has worked with children before, as a former teacher, and especially special education, you don't want to go ahead and reward negative behavior. You kind of want to go ahead and deviate from it. They're feeding right into him. And I don't think that they're going to get any information about additional victims, because that's not what they're there for. They are a profiling unit to go ahead and determine what his behavior patterns were, what his thought process, what his psyche. And they're not going to get anything else from him.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I wonder, though, if they won't get more information from other people about other victims. And I'll tell you why. Because they made it very clear that, listen, we're only pleading to these 8. And part of their agreement is that they can't hold him responsible for others. So even though they don't have immunity with him, I'm thinking there are going to be many more. And I want to hear what you have to say. We've talked about this before, but I want to get your ideas about how many other victims exist. And I think they're going to make him talk about all of them.
I cannot wait till sentencing, because I think it's going to, I think at that point, it's going to be a power struggle. he's not going to give more than he already has, because then it becomes a control thing for him. And that's ultimately what he thrives on. I do think that there are additional victims, not necessarily the ones that the district attorney has already referenced of. There are other bodies in Gilgo. There are other bodies along the beach in Jones Beach. I'm talking nationwide. When he gets sentenced, finally, his DNA will go into CODIS. CODIS, I believe, is going to light up like a Christmas tree, and you can quote me on that. Because there's already information out there that he has traveled domestically. We're not sure of internationally. We know that Asa went ahead and did her international trips to go visit her family. But that's also when he was conducting his negative behaviors and doing what he was doing. Because obviously the cat's away, the mice will play. But CODIS is going to be the real kicker right now. I know at one point there was an issue pertaining to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, which is now my new hometown. They were going ahead and looking into victims, trying to tie them to him, because he had a timeshare property a couple of blocks off the strip. And the timeshare was at the same time that there were working girls currently still missing.
Right. I think it will be interesting too. And furthermore on this, I think a lot of people may not know that people think when you're arrested, you go straight into CODIS. Every state is different. New York, unless you're convicted, you don't get the swab. Yeah. So unfortunately, just imagine all the people in New York that have been arrested, millions that are not in CODIS. People think CODIS is sort of this never-ending database. There's only, mm-hmm. I think, around 27 million in there. It's not at all. It's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to arrestees and people responsible for crime.
And the biggest thing for me when it comes down to CODIS is when you have individuals, in his case, obviously, considering the nature of his crimes and the possibility of other victims. But you have to think about also all of the backlog pertaining to rape kits throughout the entire country that have not been processed, because those sexual offenders in those states, because they don't fall into that category of 27, they were not required to give a sample. Think about the backlog of rape kits that could get solved should there actually be even a federal mandate that anyone that commits a sexual offense, whether it's against an adult and or a minor, they're required to swab. And it comes down to legislation.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. That huge backlog. And then I look back at rape kits that were done so, so long ago that are literally just sitting there. You know, with dust on them because they're part of cold case files that aren't even being looked at in different departments. So I agree with you that Christmas tree light, I like how you put it, could really light up potentially with him once he's in CODIS.
I hope so. That honestly, it's the only way to continue to get justice for additional victims in New York that we know that there are, because again, there is the male Doe, male Asian Doe that still is not accounted for. Mm-hmm. And there are other female victims that have been located, in Suffolk County, as well as in Massapequa, Jones Beach, Gilgo Beach. And because it kind of fits the MO, CODIS is going to be the real indicator.
Yeah, no, I agree. I want to also, if you wouldn't mind, because I know you are just the utmost expert on this, if you could go through the victims one by one and just describe a little bit about what the evidence was, just kind of a little snapshot of their cases. This, as you know, is a huge victim advocacy channel. So I want to just give them a little bit of highlight.
Okay. So what I want to do is I want to, because there are so many victims, and I would hate to go ahead and misspeak and or, because I've done it before where I'm working on the case and I'm speaking with other individuals pertaining to the case, as well as just timelines overall. And I hate going ahead and possibly the one that I can absolutely speak to most recently is Karen Vergata. She is victim. I don't want to say number eight because she doesn't fall as number eight in the timeline. But initially, as of last week, he was actually only supposed to be pleading guilty to seven victims. It was a last minute decision to have him plead guilty to her case. And I have to give the credit to where credit is due. The reason why Karen's case was tied to Rex was due to the work of Othram. Suffolk County Police Department paired up with Othram Labs, based out of the Woodlands. From those of you that are familiar with CrimeCon and familiar with Othram, Kristen and David Bittleman own that lab. And they are, I'm going to call the creme de la creme. They are the lab They actually just recently signed a partnership with the state of Florida, and they're working with the prosecutor's office. And they are now the go-to lab in the state of Florida to go ahead and do all of the DNA work. So I'm very excited for them on that. It's gotten to the point where now the concern is, now that he's been charged and he's pled to these eight victims, there's a backlog of a conversation now coming forward of, what about Shannon Gilbert? And that's always going to be a conversation to be had, because just because the medical report says one thing, certain detectives and investigators have their own opinion. Well, it does fit, it doesn't fit, because it's a completely different narrative on the basis of what exactly took place the night of Shannon's disappearance. And then also the way that led to her death, it did not match the others. So again, in that situation, also CODIS would be the big Christmas tree light again to go ahead and assist with Shannon's case.
And I got to tell you, I agree with you completely. Shannon's everything that happened in that case does not match with the rest. Nothing about that case does. And I know her attorney, I know everybody is sort of fighting for her to be a victim. As you said, DNA may actually answer some of those questions, but strictly from an investigative lens, that's not going to be a match. I didn't know you and I matched up on that.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about it last time. I think we were just more like, okay, he just got indicted, let's have a conversation. I've been very hesitant to sometimes discuss it because I don't want to, it's not the fact of going on record. I just don't want someone to take my words and use them as fact. Who's that? Wiles Pony? Well, I'm glad I did a brain match with you and I kind of beat you to it. Awesome. And the MO is completely different. From start to finish, the MO, the timeline, the fact that everything else took place from the beginning. And yes, Shannon's case did start this. They found Shannon, which led to the discovery of the others. But even though she went ahead and she started and she became, I guess, the champion of locating the other victims, and I will call her the champion for locating the other victims, that it doesn't necessarily mean that the MO was the same. It does not mean that the timeline was the same. So I think that has to be kept into consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, our hearts go out to Shannon, to her family, for everything that she suffered, because she's no longer with us. And I agree with you. She was a champion for sort of kickstarting this case off. And, you know, the results are just fantastic, but I think there's many more to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I want to ask you about this. Everybody has always asked from the beginning about Asa, and actually even her daughter. What do you think, if there is any culpability at all, what do you think on this?
Deep breath. Okay, so I'm like, let me think before I speak for once in my life. Okay. So it's not the first time that we've had a case where there are multiple victims, where family members of the perpetrator, because I'm going to call, he's no longer alleged. Let's cut the bullshit. It's no longer alleged serial killer. He's a goddamn serial killer. So there have been other times where there have been other serial killers where their family members were compartmentalized and they were told, do not open that door. Do not go here. Do not go there. So it's not like it's the first time that we've actually heard this from her. I think yesterday her tone at the press conference was completely inappropriate. She's going ahead and saying, oh, well, we need to focus on the victims. We need to focus on that. But it's the tone and inflection to the way that she's delivering the message. There was no empathy behind what she was saying. And I'm going to say it was scripted, no pun intended, because Peacock was there. And now that's an ongoing conversation in the true crime community of, because of the Son of Sam laws, that means Son of Sam again is David Berkowitz. A law was created in New York State that a criminal cannot financially profit off of their crimes. So Rex cannot write a book. Someone cannot make a movie about him and he can receive profit from that. In this situation, Asa can go ahead and she can profit from telling her story. Me personally, I think it's complete bullshit because it's a media grab, number one. Number two, she's going ahead and trying to receive income to offset the fact that her husband is obviously no longer employed and there is no longer any income coming in because she's not working either. So you're still going to be highlighting the asshole that he is, and you're not going to be dedicating the time to the victims.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, what happened is this law didn't go far enough, in my opinion. This law should have extended out to immediate family as well.
100%. Any immediate families. I don't care if it's blood, adoptive. Your dog is not going to profit. Like, the dog's not getting a Tempur-Pedic bed. I don't give a crap. Like, it should have been, an entire net should have been cast.
Yeah, I agree. And it was a huge mistake. And she made that money. And I also believe that that's why she didn't leave him. They needed those conversations. So much went on that was really, as you said, scripted by Peacock, or at least pushed in the direction it went by Peacock. I think things would have changed much differently with their relationship and so on. But you know what? She got paid $1 million+ to keep everything together for a movie. Yep. And it's sad. It just really diminishes the worth of each of the women who were taken.
It's, you're highlighting, again, the way that BAU is going to work with him, and they're going to feed into him and give him what he wants. They're feeding now into the fact that he is going to be established in Hollywood per se. He is going to now have a whole new audience of people. Because think about the Gilgo case. Unless you're involved, unless you're a fan of true crime, you're directly involved, or you're consulting as an expert, or you live on Long Island, or you live in New York State. Those are your target, quote unquote, demographics that are going to be interested in this case. Now you're casting a much wider net, and even internationally, for people to go ahead and understand and learn who the family is and who he is. And they're not learning about the victims.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So, Lisa, I'm not sure whether we got an answer yet out of you, but I'm sure I asked it directly enough. Do you believe Asa was involved in any way with these victims?
I don't think that she was directly involved. I think she had some capacity of knowledge.
Fair enough.
Because there's a difference between involvement, meaning personal direct. And I'll use it in terms of like how I will conduct a polygraph exam. My relevant questions would be, did you do it? Do you know who did it? Do you have knowledge? And when I explain, do you have knowledge? They told you they did it. You have evidence that they did it, or they saw it take place. I think she has an understanding to some degree of what transpired. But I do not think she personally was involved. And the way that she got linked to it was because of the DNA that was located on the burlap sack due to her hair. And then, of course, her daughter's DNA because of the surveillance that was taking place on the Long Island Railroad platform when they grabbed that Monster energy drink.
Yeah, and let's be frank. This house was literally a hoarder house. It was wall-to-wall boxes. It was dirty.
Oh my God.
Their hair would have been everywhere.
Think about the odor. The house is so old and so decrepit. I mean, I drove past the house. I was actually outside the house the second set of search warrants were there. And I was with Laura Engel from News Nation, and we just camped out all day. And the amount of crap that they were taking out of that house. So you got to think about how old it is, how much shit's in there, and the smell. Like, obviously he's got a background in construction, in permits, in all of that kind of realm. Maybe he did some work and he actually had some sort of insulation downstairs. But even if the door does not fully match the floor, like, you're still going to have an odor or something coming from underneath. Like, how do you mask that? Like, my dog pees on the carpet. I smell it for 2 days. Like, you have dismemberment.
Come on, you don't mask it. We both know that, you know, between the blood and the other,
the other bodily fluids, like you can't mask it.
You can't. And it's very difficult for me to believe she didn't have some knowledge, but I agree with you. I don't think she participated. I don't think he wanted her to participate. People like this want it for their own. They don't want to share it. That's why they don't want a trial. They don't want to be forced. They want to be in control of what they say, when they say.
Well, that's why, and that's the whole thing with the compartmentalization of serial killers and or anyone that commits murder or homicide. They go ahead and they compartmentalize all of their negative behavior, and it's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I mean, Dennis did the same shit. He was the neighborhood dog animal watcher. He was working with animal control. He was working with the Boy Scouts. He was going on hiking and family trips. He was going ahead and working at the I think he was even actually working at the police station, if I remember correctly. And everything was compartmentalized. So you were literally were Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, serial killer in an evening. And then during the day, he was a consultant doing the architecture crap.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to tell you what a crime. This was a crime, this haircut. I don't know who talked him into this, but.
Holy shit, the night and day. What the? That's, you can't. Okay, he either pissed someone off in jail to give him that barbershop haircut, or he, you can't, no, I'm done. That's not even a salad bowl.
I don't know. I think inmates actually assist with cutting the hair. You know, the barber inmate. I don't know whether this was purposeful enough, but I tell you the way, what did you think about just the way he presented in that courtroom?
The smugness.
Yes.
All he said was, yes, Your Honor, and strangulation. Yes, strangulation. Yes. That's it. And every single time he had that goddamn smirk on his face. And it's more that he's even though he's facing the judge, that he knew that his photograph was being taken, and the smugness and just the complete emotional discord from the situation. It's like he's laughing about it. And now the family members are going to be remembering this day because all of it's going to be all over the media. This photo, God damn it. I wish I could choke him out myself, but I can't. there's bars and barbed wire and yeah. But it's the smugness. And again, he's a serial killer. He's completely emotionally removed. He doesn't have that skill set or capacity. So we can't expect so much of him. So this behavior that he's going ahead and using and he's exhibiting is a normal, natural behavior for him.
It reminded me so much of Brian Koberger. And, you know, initially I was so upset because I felt like neither of them had to allocute much. I wasn't in the courtroom, you know, federally. I saw everything with Brian Koberger's. This we had to rely on reporting. It was a little delayed and quite honestly for me a little bit confusing because it said they gave detail, but they didn't mean he gave detail. They gave detail and he affirmed the details. But I'm just going to play a little devil's advocate with you, Lisa, because I got to tell you, I was happy to hear that at least he is going to be forced to talk. I get your point. It's really not forced. He wants to. He is so much like Dennis Radar. He can't wait to talk about his body of work, if you will. But at least he has to. At least they're forcing that. With Brian Koberger, they're not getting anything.
Yeah. I would have to take it a step further and think that Brian, I don't want to call it clinically trained, but he sat in the classrooms and the sessions pertaining to learning the behaviors of other serial killers, almost like a master course on how to conduct himself. And look at who his professor was. His professor was Catherine Ramsland, the co-author of Dennis's book. Mm-hmm. So it's the connection. It's like I said, the 3 degrees of separation of serial killers. I mean, there was also a time where it was publicly out there that Keith Jesperson, the happy face killer, was communicating with Rex via letters.
Yep.
So it's like they have their own little fan club of each other and they're all communicating.
Yeah, it's amazing. They all understand each other. Look, the BAU is going to try to use this to understand. But if anything, we know based on Ramsland, who is supposed to be one of the premier serial killer experts, she couldn't recognize one that was in her classroom every day. And that she actually was the one of his counselors. She was a counselor for him and didn't recognize what was below. So I think these guys are just so good at masking, like you said, at being Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde that nobody, even the most trained professionals, could recognize at the end of the day.
It's scary.
You ready to move on to another guy? Now, listen, we aren't allowed to say GD because of YouTube rules.
I didn't know that. Like, fun fact, I learned something today. So if you want to put across my face the NBC logo, the more you know, that's fine.
No. I'm only saying this because I know this is going to really incite you. We're going from one happy face to another. Sorry, Lisa.
That's fine. I filtered my thoughts. Don't worry.
Yeah. No, I want your thoughts unfiltered. I want you to give us, you know, what you've really, one of the people I think who has been loudest and strongest from the beginning, before a lot of people were talking a lot about this, before sources were coming out of the woodwork, which I think they're all the same source. But nevertheless, tell us your thoughts about this investigation, and then we'll really deep dive into it. But tell us about your thoughts on the investigation overall.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
I guess the legal term is an investigation. In my eyes, this is not an investigation. And Jen, you know from experience the way the cases are supposed to be handled, even when it comes down to a case intake, this has been off the rails since the case was reported, I guess. I mean, my first issue with him was the fact that they didn't retain the crime scene long enough. Because you hold the crime scene, you go in, you do all of your evaluations, everything from DNA to fiber to fingerprints to scoping for hidden cameras, things like that. And then you also have cell phone, you have forensics. And that's where the FBI was trying to come in and say, hey, listen, we're going to help you. And from day one, the sheriff was going ahead and saying, no, we've got it. Don't worry about it. We're not going to go ahead. We don't need your help. So to deny the resources and the assistance of the FBI from square one, that was a red flag for me. That was also the fact of not holding the crime scene, because he held that crime scene. He thought, okay, I have what I need to start an investigation. And then you have people going in and out of the house. So now you no longer have a solid crime scene that's been held. It's now tampered with. And then he goes, oh crap, we got to go back in the house. So then they have to reseal off the house again. But it's not an authentic crime scene because it's been tainted with everyone that's been gone into the house. So that was kind of a whole big hoopla of, well, now you have all of this extra DNA, even footprints on the floor. Maybe they didn't get the footprint this first time, but now they have extra footprints the second. How are they going to go ahead and determine, is it from part A or from part B?
And how about this, Lisa, too? The fact that we talk about this Lockhart's theory. I mean, when you go in, you might bring a dog hair. You might bring one of your
transfers.
It's terrible because it's trash. It's not a crime scene. It's a trash scene at this point.
Yeah, 100%. And the transference is just astronomical when you have to go ahead and reopen the scene. And from what I understand, the reason why they reopened the scene is because he finally said, okay, the FBI has technology resources where they needed to go ahead and do geofencing, and they needed to go ahead and access what phone numbers were hitting the cell tower that was the closest to the house between a certain time period. It's a smart idea, don't get me wrong, but who is going to commit a crime, walk into a house that has some sort of an intelligence level and not turn off their phone or even bring their phone into a crime scene? So you have to kind of think in the mind of a perpetrator. And in this case, I do think that there is more than one. There's got to be some sort of collaboration amongst the two of them. or three or four, however many. Like, think of the TV shows where you got all the perps sitting in the room and they've got some floor plan and they're all figuring out, you do this and you do that, and they're divvying up the responsibilities. That is, I kind of think, what transpired in this situation. It's just been a mess from day one.
It's interesting because I concur with you. But let me tell you, my epiphany point was probably 5-6 weeks ago. It was total epiphany when I saw the antenna sticking out of his pocket. It is as clear as day when he bends over. It's a black, small antenna. I've been over it so much, I know I don't want to bore the audience with it. But when I saw that, I was like, see, there's definitely, I mean, you believe there's more than two, because crimes like this, in every instance that I can think of, look, if it were a sexual assault, I would say, yeah, it could be one person. If it were murder, I'd say, it could be one person. We are talking about an abduction where you have to take them to a secondary location, where you have to coordinate the in and out. She's 150 pounds, everyone. And when you have dead weight, and I don't mean she was dead, I mean weight that you are 100% controlling, it's extremely difficult to manipulate and to transfer and to get a hold of and to gag and to put in the car and to drive away.
Well, and then you bring up transference, where removing a victim from a scene. Well, obviously they're going to be, she had multiple entrances and exits out of the house. That's number one. So they're going to need more than one person to cover those exits, so she doesn't run outside or start screaming outside. Number two, there, common sense to me would be you at least have two people. If they got her out of the house, you have one driver and then someone sitting in the back seat with her, because what's going to prevent her from opening the door and just rolling out of the car? So she's got to be restrained to some capacity, and under the eyes of someone else.
Yeah, you know, there are many of us that agree with this, but you know, Mac, and I love Mac McCollum, she is convinced this is a soul actor, a whack job, you know, kind of a Hinckley, you know, that tried to take out Reagan, that is this type of situation, that this is all kind of towards Savannah and it's a whack job and he did it all on his own. She makes this point by saying, and I think this is a good point. She says, look, on the camera, you only ever see porch guy. But even in the, you know, the surveillance, right, that was done on January 11th. But my point about that is, because that was his job. His job was to remove the camera. His job was the front porch.
Yeah.
We don't see the back porch people because we have no camera footage there. Now, remember, there is that motion detector of, remember when the sheriff slipped and said a person? And he's like, well, it could have been, you know, meanwhile, the FBI was staring at it. Shut up. And he says, animal.
Yep.
You remember that? Well, he says, well, it could be an animal because they didn't want him to slip up about saying it was a person.
Well, he's going to backpedal as much as he can at that point.
Yeah, he's a backpedaler. Let's face it. So we talked about crime scene. What else in terms of Nanos did you want to talk about in terms of faulty decision making? Oh, you also mentioned the Bureau, not getting the Bureau in until way too late.
Yeah. Getting the Bureau in way too late. Then going ahead, and I felt like his advocating for tips and assistance from the general public was so like nonchalant. And it was just so standard. It wasn't like, hey, let's rally together. So Kitties just wrote, I think / hope they have a lot more than they're working on than we know. In my opinion, I don't think they have anything at this point. Because at the beginning, another issue that I had with him is that he was grandstanding, holding these press conferences, and we have news, and we have this, and we have that. It gave false hope to the family every single time. Not only that, you're then drawing media attention to the family, and they get inundated with requests to do media, or what are your thoughts about this? What is that? It's just, and I've seen it before, and Jen, you know from experience, good leadership only speaks when they have to, not when they need to.
Mm-hmm. Or not when they want to.
Yes, that's another one. Like, it's not like a speak when spoken to. It's I'm going to talk when I know I have something important to say.
And that's why you see the Bureau never talk. If you look at the Gabby Petito case, they talked at the very end. And yeah. They let everybody, look, there is nothing to be gained from talking. Do I think it was a good idea when he decided to say the family was cleared? Yes, but he did it. Well, he did it speaking first, and then he did it in writing. I thought that was really important. Let me get your thoughts on that. What did you think about that decision?
I think because of what the narrative was initially involving the brother-in-law, I think that they wanted to publicly clear him in the court of public opinion to reduce any tips or leads that possibly could come in, because already out there, it was the court of opinion. Everyone thought it was him. Everyone thought that participation, whether he did it himself directly or he worked with a bunch of hooligans doing this. I think that they wanted to go ahead and just alleviate that pressure off the family. I'm always a firm believer of just because you have the opportunity to say something, I rather it be in writing. So I don't misspeak at an interview. I don't talk out of both sides of my mouth. And I don't get a question where I actually have to respond, well, I don't know. Because yeah. The last thing you want to do is have your leadership respond to media or even their supervisors. Because you always think you have a boss, but that boss has a boss. You never want to say, I don't know. And so if he actually had taken along the way, instead of having these grandstanding press conferences, and he just put things in writing and it's listed on department or agency letterhead, a statement from the sheriff's office, and he just releases it, that's it.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think we are in such different times, because the times we're in now, there is so much social media out there, and there are people that literally threatened, you know, the families, yeah. Annie, Tommy, he likes to be called Tommy, the drummer, his kid couldn't even go to school. They had to keep his child away from the house. They were so worried about threats and things because it spun out of control. This is what's happening to these witnesses and victims that are initially blamed. This is what they're going through. And I know I did a poll. You're not going to believe this, Lisa. Still 50% of my audience, which my audience is pretty sharp, I think. You know,
yeah, I see the comments. They're pretty with it.
Yeah, and other audiences are very much on that other side. I can't even imagine what a poll would look like for that. But essentially, they were ready. People were ready to behead this guy.
Yeah, it's the court of public opinion. Once something is out there, it's going to get ran. It's going to get tweeted. It's going to be Instagrammed. It's going to be all over the place. And this poor guy doesn't get a shot in hell to vindicate himself.
Yeah. So for that reason, I was happy that they came out. I mean, law enforcement, and they did it in the Idaho case as well. You don't have to do it in every case. You have to do it in huge, high profile cases, because if not, you're literally worried about these people getting shot, getting killed, you know, their kids, their jobs, their financial well-being. And they had to come out to me, or they would have gotten sued and far worse. I mean, just inundated with complaints. Yeah. I want to ask you talked about, you also believe there's more than one person. What is your overall theory on the case?
You mean like right now, as in like, where is she, or what is like, what are the next steps, or?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was so broad, Lisa.
I want to make sure I answer the question. So I just wasn't sure which angle you were going with.
Yeah. So I'm going with why do you think the person entered? Was it a planned abduction? Was it a robbery gone bad? Was it a planned murder? And then they took the body. What are your thoughts?
I think that this was a home invasion gone wrong, because you did have multiple individuals going ahead to try and, I guess, get into the house all at once and get in and get out. I think that there's a possibility that she could have said who she is and who her daughter is, and that there could have then been financial motive to go from a home invasion to a kidnapping. What I don't agree with is how all of the ransom notes only go to TMZ.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that this was a planned abduction. Just because most home invasions I've seen, it's a smash and grab. They're not this smart that you could see them all line up and go in. And they don't go in at these hours of the night. And typically, of course, the thief won't. Thief wants to go to a business, but they don't want to go to a private home because they don't want to see people, right? I mean, a true burglar type person. But I think we totally agree on the fact it went bad and she died. So do you have a belief on what happened after she died? Do you think she died in the house, or do you think there's just not enough information right now to tell? What's your thoughts on that?
Anything is possible at this point. And so for me to go ahead and render what my own thoughts are, I can't speak because I don't have the facts. Could it have been a medical issue? Absolutely, because we knew she was on medications. Could it have been something that took place in the actual house? Maybe there was combative behavior, things like anything is possible. The same thing that falls into any, it's anywhere. She could be anywhere. It's a needle in a haystack, because just because the initial crime was in Tucson, I'm so gl okay. Sorry, I'm spiraling right now because I'm glad you put that up and I saw that. And I was going to say something to you before. Did you see how his holster, his gun, was on his pants in the photo?
Oh yeah, I
Like,
see it there.
to me, I think, and I work with law enforcement on the state and the federal level. I train federal employees with regards to polygraph and investigations and interviewing and interrogation. And I have never in my life seen someone carry a firearm like that. Number one, the firearm doesn't even look like it fits the holster. So it just that right there shows an inadequacy and lack of knowledge of holding firearms or retaining them on your person. Typically, when you have, I mean, Jen, would you agree that someone like that, like if you're an actual firearm enthusiast, if you want to call it that way, and a situation like this in a home, wouldn't the appendix carry? And they would
Well,
just brandish a weapon, maybe.
yeah, I agree. I mean, number one, I've never seen a gang member. I've never seen a cartel guy with a holster. First of all, I mean, these types of cases, they have them in their pockets, they have them in their waistbands. They don't go out and buy holsters. That's they just don't. And so that stuck out. This seemed to me almost like a more wannabe. But he thought about all these things. Literally, he's like a true crimer.
Thank
He's
you.
like
He
he's from our audience.
he's watched too many movies, like even down to the ski mask. Like, and look at the size of the gloves. Like, that's literally, hey, I'm like, honestly, this is a Halloween costume to me.
I'm convinced he's double gloved. They
Yes.
don't fit him. I think he has glove. I think he was like, oh, what happens if my glove rips?
Rips,
You know
breaks,
what?
tears, yeah.
I think I'll put another one underneath. That's why, and they don't fit.
No.
It's like he ordered them from Amazon. They came in, they didn't fit, and he said, well, I got to roll.
But like in this situation, so you can buy items like so it's already been established that that backpack was sold through Walmart.
Right.
Okay, so like for me as an investigator, I would go ahead and I would serve a warrant to whatchamacallit, to Walmart, and go ahead and see who purchased that backpack recently, because the backpack was shown to be in pretty decent condition, so it looked relatively brand new. Same thing with the gloves. So, like anything that he's wearing in that, I'm going to call it a costume, because it's not normal attire. Like you would think all black, 100%, so you don't get seen. But even the reflective vest on the straps, that doesn't make sense either. But take a look at the inventory. Like what items get sold at a certain time in bulk? And it's one of the things that I was saying regarding Nancy's medication. Taking a look to go ahead and see, did anyone pick up all of her prescriptions or some of them that have never picked them up before? Because then you can interview that person and say, hey, listen, like you don't have any of these medical conditions, but all of these meds were prescribed to you. Why are you picking them up?
Yeah, I think that there is so much being worked on that end that you're exactly speaking of, Lisa, in terms of the garb. Nobody talks about it anymore. And yes, this backpack could have been bought you know, secondary, right? It could have been, it could have been in a Goodwill store, or whatever. It looks in good shape. All of his costume, if you will, it all looks like this is what he was comfortable in, though. Like just the way that he wears this clothing. I don't know. I guess what I mean by this is you look at a guy like Luigi Mangione. Yeah. He's got $350 backpack, $200, you know, jeans. He, you knew exactly when you saw him, this kid has a lot of money. They came from wealth. I look at this guy and I say the opposite. This guy likes to be comfortable and he has an idea in his head what he should look like.
He's watched too many movies and seen too many like shows and he just figured like, let me try this, which is why I think in this situation where he sees the camera and goes, oh crap. I don't think there was any recognizance. And I don't think it's like, I don't think there was any surveillance done previously because they would have known about the camera.
Well, you know, I think you may know this. And again, a lot of this is source information, but basically a lot of the neighbors said that law enforcement came back and they said, they're looking at the 11th. They need video from then. They need video mm-hmm. from the 24th and the 31st. In other words, the night before the morning.
Yeah.
And have you seen the photo of him on a different day? Possibly, you know, he doesn't have the backpack. He doesn't have the gun. He doesn't have the holster. And it's very dark behind him. We know this day was a full moon. I didn't know if you have seen that photo.
No.
But
you have it?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to put it up. Sorry for the clicking. Everybody tells me they can hear my clicking, so apologies in advance. I've got an external microphone, but it doesn't work near as well as this one. I'm going to have to get a better one, I think. I do have it. Here it is. I'll bring it up right now. So no back.
Now I know the photo you're talking about.
Yeah, very dark. Remember, it was a full moon this night. This night would have been a waning gibbous. A waning crescent. So a lot less light in the background, possibly. So I really do believe this could be on the 11th. It matches up with all the source reporting. And now, did you see what Savannah even says now? And I'll bring that up, too.
Yeah.
Savannah also said the 11th. So,
I mean, just taking a look at the physical build, like even just shoulder, shoulder length clothing, the way that the fingers are fitting within the gloves, size of the head in comparison, like, yeah, this is a further way, but you can kind of get an idea of because the person was so close to the nest and then this. Obviously, it's like a Scooby-Doo thing. You got to pull the mask off to figure out who's underneath. But just physical attributes of this photo versus the other one, I do see similarities.
Yeah, I mean, it looks to me like the same person, but different shoes. If you look up close, Lisa, these shoes are different.
Different shoes.
The jacket, no holster, which, you know, initially I said a couple of things. First of all, it could be an accomplice. Second of all, it could be the same day, and then he looks, kind of gets his bearings, and then gets his kit. You know, we see that all the time. Or it could be a different day. And now it is ferreting out. Even our friend Nanos says, basically, he cops to the fact that it's probably something, a different day on the 11th. I'll show you what he has to say.
They did an area canvas. That's really what it was.
Well, they did a lot of canvassing. I mean, to me, one of the things, Nanos, again, a mess up. Whenever you canvass, obviously, initially, sometimes it's difficult, but you get questions together that the same questions are asked at every residence. Yep. So that you know what's been asked, you know what's been answered, and you don't have to repeat. To me, this is one of the worst canvass jobs I've ever seen between what happened at Annie's house, what happened at Nancy's house. This is insane that you canvass and re-canvass. And now you have people 30, 60 days later coming out and saying, oh, I remember my dog barked. You know how that is. When all of a sudden it's the 60 days later, they want to help. They want to remember. But I don't put a lot of credence in people that all of a sudden.
No. I agree with you. You can't go. It's going back to the well too late. Because what happens is that whatever thought, and I think, and I went on record in one of the articles that I was contributed towards, is that you have the, what they actually thought took, or what, sorry, whatever they knew took place is now sabotaged and treated with misinformation because of narratives that they're hearing from other people and what they're reading. So it's no longer an authentic memory that they can go ahead and recall. And taking a look at this quote here, I mean, it's done March, he quoted March 23rd. And that's with the analysis of the equipment and digital stuff that they've done referencing the FBI. Look how late it was done. Why was this not done sooner when the crime scene was first held? Because he refused the cooperation of the FBI.
You are 100% right. I mean, I tell you what they did right in the Idaho 4 case. They had 60 agents assigned, and they had way more than that working, and all the state police and the state police crime. Like, they had more personnel on that case. That was a blitzkrieg. That's what this one needed to be. But as you know, it sucks kind of to armchair quarterback, right? Because in this situation, remember initially they thought she just walked away. And I'm like, what about all the blood on the front porch and the fact the doors were open in the back?
How do you miss blood on the front porch? That's the first, that if that's your entry point, that's where you should be spending at least 45% of your time going ahead and taking a look at that. Even if you want to look for chiseling into a wood to see if a tool was used to break into the house, because then you can go ahead and look at the wood markings to possibly determine what type of tool was used. So that blood should never have been missed.
Well, and I think the fact, too, that it stopped, as in a car. In other words, this wasn't her, you know, headed to the mailbox or something. They said she could barely walk to the mailbox, barely walk 50 yards, and she was in dire pain, serious back issues. She's 84, heart issues, all of this. What do you think about this, Lisa? Do you think that whoever took her well knew that she was going to die at 84 years old with her ailments?
Unless the individual received information from a known source that had that information and distributed it to the perpetrators, I do not believe that there would be any way that they would know.
Yeah. So you more feel like your belief is that this was more of a stranger situation as opposed to some inside knowledge and her being targeted because of either her or because of Savannah.
I think that it eventually became a targeted situation once they realized who she was. Maybe initially that they never thought it, but at the same time, you got to think, why would they choose her house? Like, you could hit anyone else on the block. So it's like a catch 22. It's like, yeah, this could have just been a random home invasion, but then look at whose house it is. So again, until the perpetrator is caught and the conversation, bring it back to the BAU, you bring them in and you figure out and you have them have a conversation, because at this point, the investigation has gone on so long and there are no answers. I'm sure they're involved at this point. To some capacity. And I'm sure that they're going to, once they'll help with maybe not directly conducting the interview of the perpetrator or alleged suspects that come in, but they will go ahead and they will assist the investigators on crafting the interview. Because, you know, Jen, there's 15 different ways you can ask one question. And the amount of courses that I've taught on I&I, which is interview and interrogation, every single person will do it differently, because it even comes down to tone and intonation and how you deliver the question. It comes down to phrasing of the question, the wording, things like that. So I think the BAU will play a role in help scripting the interview, but I don't believe that they're going to directly be involved that way.
Well, I got to be honest, I've been so disappointed, just beyond disappointed. We've talked about it here, about the fact that to solve this case, because there's so many dead ends with DNA having multiple characters or characteristics in it that show multiple profiles. So I think that's a dead end or close to a dead end. I had Dr. Fitzpatrick on, who is the guru, invented and was the first, solved the first case with genetic genealogy. Yeah. And her opinion is with two or more mixed, which is what Nano said, it's more than two. It's not two. I'm sorry. It's more than two, that it's virtually impossible for the DNA to be used for IgG. And then you have all the issues with tracing the two ransom notes they say now are affiliated. You've got all these issues. So now we're left to Porch Guy, which I've always said, Porch Guy could solve the case, but why in the world isn't his mug everywhere? On flyers, at grocery stores, on telephone poles, on billboards. This is who we need to see. And we also need to see the enhanced photos that were done by Quantico. These came right away. We didn't get to see those. We haven't seen. I've been screaming about this. The BAU, I had the Greg McCrary, who was John Douglas's partner. And I know you've got to go soon.
I just realized what time it was. And I'm like, oops.
Oops. But anyway, the profiling, the appearance, all of that needs to be splashed everywhere. For me, I think this is the only way this is going to be solved.
My only issue is that taking a look at that photo, you have a flash in the direct in the mouth, so that's not usable. All you have, and you even have pupil reflection. But should this be enhanced? I mean, Quantico and agencies have the capability of actually going in and cleaning that up. For retina, take that and run it through DMV. Everyone takes a DMV photo. Your eyes are not going to change.
Oh, and there are way better pictures. I have some good pictures.
I know you've got a plethora of stuff, but I'm just saying in general, if they can go ahead and they can get a clear pupil retinal type of imagery, run it through DMV. And I mean, I would hope that that was already done, but then you have to think about, okay, well, did this guy actually have a driver's license? Maybe he's part of the group of hooligans that are involved in this crime, but maybe he doesn't actually have a license. So he was only tasked with doing something else and is not the driver.
Well, yeah, he could be from Mexico.
Exactly. And I mean,
there's so many possibilities. And listen, I know you have to go. I told you we would be 40 minutes like usual.
We were like, okay, it's going to be about a half hour, 40 minutes. And I'm like, you know what? This is just too much more fun.
You and I could talk forever about this. There's so much. I can't thank you enough again for coming.
Of course.
You are in a hotel room. She just landed.
I got your message at 7 o'clock yesterday morning, but for some reason my notifications didn't go through and I didn't see it till like 8 o'clock last night. And hence why you saw my reactions of, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I need to get back to you, blah, blah, blah. Like, so that's why I offered. I was like, I can do this with you at like 6 o'clock in the morning before my flight, or we can squeeze it in. So I'm glad that I was able to get on the ground here in Seattle. I'm actually here, at a, I would call it more of a symposium for the National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation. And they're working with, it's actually, the panel's hosted by Nate Eaton. And they're going to be discussing the Gary Ridgway Green River Killer. And I don't want to say an interest in the case, but as a polygraph examiner, Gary did take a polygraph test, and pertaining to those results. And that's kind of what drew me kind of here. So I was like, you know what? I live in Vegas. It's only a 2-hour flight. Like, let me get out of the house for, just the day. And now I'm here and I'm going to go sit in class.
Well, that's great. You have a great time. Thank you for a little time for us. And I'll see you soon, Lisa. You're the best. I appreciate you so much.
Absolutely not a problem. Jewel, you can send me a direct message. Because I just saw you mention Timothy Busfield. I do have a lot to say about that. I've actually semi-consulted on that case because a colleague of mine is the one that ran the exam. So you can find me on social media and you and I can have a conversation regarding that.
And you know what, Lisa? Next time I'll have you back. Specifically, I'll pick about 4 cases.
Yeah.
Give them to you in advance that you've been involved with or know about and talk to you about the polygraph results of those. All right.
Awesome. Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jen. I'll talk to you soon. Sure. Oops. I smashed her out too quickly. Anyway, you know what I love about Lisa? She is unapologetically has her opinions. And I really wanted to let her just be completely unleashed because she has very strong opinions, but they are really in particular, her area of expertise is obviously polygraph, but it's also investigations and interrogations and things along those lines. And she's just so good at that. And her LISC knowledge, the Long Island serial killer, really, there's almost no one more knowledgeable overall about that case and just followed it so closely for so long. So it was a treat having her on. I want to get her back on. I would love to have her come on with another polygraph examiner who's pretty famous within the Bureau, Eric Johnson, and he still does polygraphs too, and have them both come on and talk about polys and also about very specific cases of polygraphs. Like was asked in our audience. I think she would be a great interview for that. That is just so squarely in her lane. But while she was here, I wanted to talk to her a little bit about Nancy Guthrie, because of course that's a case that has so many experts fooled or not fooled, befuddled. Because the FBI befuddled. And believe me, they have so much more than we can see. And I don't know that they have any clear path. But I've talked about it before with 30,000 things on your to-do list. That's how many leads they had. They are, have a fire hose in their mouth, and there's very few working on it now comparatively. At one point, there were 100 agents on it, and now it's part of a task force, which means, yes, they're working on it, but they have other cases that task force is working on it. And I believe there's probably one case agent, a couple of other lead agents, and then the Pima County and a few others assisting. And then anytime they have a big lead or something they need to do, whether it's a canvas or whether it's an interview, obviously they get more people involved. But this is way pared down because it has to be. You can imagine all the cases that, as an example, those 100 FBI agents dropped cases they were working that were also very important to work on Nancy's case. And I can tell you that took a hard left turn a few weeks ago at the time that we discussed it. And so, nevertheless, I have faith. I gave it 6 months. We're going to see where it ends up being. But within 6 months, I'm hopeful. If it goes beyond the 6 month time frame, if we get into the year or so time frame, as you know, with every second that ticks by, it's less and less probable for this to be solved. But I'll continue having great guests on, especially as different cases break. As I said, Lisa, when it comes to Rex Heuermann, she knows those cases or that case inside and out. So we were lucky to have her, and I want to thank each of you. This is not our normal time frame. Actually, we probably should have done the 9 o'clock time frame, but I had a News Nation hit, and so I could not do it. But I tell you what, I was thrilled to have Lisa and her energy. So everyone, until next time, may justice be served for the Guthries and for all the missing. Thank you for being here at this odd time frame. I know that there are so many other shows that go on at 7 o'clock, and I so appreciate y'all being here. Thank you.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.